Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Greetings, mortals, to another Council of Trent podcast. Do I dare spook you on this All Hallows Eve? Perhaps I should say this. You seem frightened indeed. Your cadaverous pallor betrays an aura of foreboding, as though you sense a disquieting metamorphosis. This is a line from Shakespeare. It's actually Disneyland's Haunted Mansion. But who doesn't enjoy good, clean, little bit creepy, scary fun? It's Halloween here on the Council of Trent podcast, coming to you from Catholic Answers Studio. I am your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today, normally, if it's Wednesday, it'd be Workshop Wednesday. But I thought we'd talk about more special related themes today because it is Halloween. Hopefully, you're having a safe, prudent Halloween tonight if you're planning to go out anywhere. I'm going to be taking the kiddos out on the annual candy run that essentially becomes a way for them to learn about the possibilities of an exorbitant tax system that, although I think is in the child's best interest, because when kids, even older kids, even when you take older elementary school kids out trick-or-treating, no kid should really have that much candy. So I think it is actually a good service for me to confiscate or at least levy a very heavy tax burden on the candy my children bring into the house. They get to have some, they get to have their fun, but the rest goes in a big bin and a very high cabinet for daddy to be able to gorge on at his pleasure, because my wife has far too much self-control for that. So of course, yes, it's Halloween. Should Catholics be celebrating Halloween? Well, of course, when we say this is All Hallows Eve, it's the eve that we celebrate before All Saints Day tomorrow. Very lucky that we get to have a special Mass here at Catholic Answers. The office will be closed because it's a holy day of obligation, but we're very blessed to be able to have a chapel here at the office where we can have adoration, have daily Mass, and we even get to have Mass on holy days even when the office is closed. They graciously open up the chapel, and our chaplain, Father Hugh Barber, says Mass for us or others when he is not available. So I think that Halloween is something that, you know, life has its light and its darkness, you know, the shivers and chills. I mean, we're engaged in a cosmic battle between forces of good and evil. So for children to understand the concepts of good and evil, the darkness and the light, I think that's fine if it's introduced to them in an appropriate way. I don't think it's appropriate, however, to dwell on the occult aspects of Halloween. I know some people who are, you know, getting together. I know someone close to me, actually, who is Christian, but is going to have a party where they're going to cast a spell at the end of it. Even if it's all done in good fun, I think that that's a very bad idea. When you look at the Catechism, for example, paragraph 2116, this is what it says. All forms of divination are to be rejected. Recourse to Satan or demons, conjuring up the dead, or other practices falsely supposed to unveil the future, consulting horoscopes, astrology, palm reading, interpretation of omens and lots, clairvoyance, recourse to mediums. So one, paragraph 2116 prohibits occult instances that try to form divination or figuring out the future or talking to dead people. If you remember in the book of Samuel in the Bible, King Saul wanted advice from the prophet Samuel, who was deceased, and he went to a witch. He went to the witch of Endor, and she conjured up Samuel's ghost and pulled him up from the underworld, and so Saul was able to communicate with him about that, though that was against God's law. He wasn't supposed to do that. King Saul broke lots of God's laws when he kind of went off his rocker a little bit and went after David. Although the paragraph in the Catechism goes on to say in paragraph 2117, practices of magic and sorcery by which one attempts to tame occult powers so as to place them at one's service and have a supernatural power over others, is, even if it were for the sake of restoring their health, are gravely contrary to the virtue of religion. Wearing charms is also reprehensible. Spiritism often implies divination or magical practices. So the church condemns things like superstition, the occult, even taking religious objects and applying superstitious elements to them, like thinking a scapulet, for example, rather than wearing it as something that as a reminder of your faith, something that predisposes you to receive the grace of God, thinking that it's something, a cross or a a rosary or a chaplet or a scapular, thinking that this object in and of itself has some kind of magical power to do good for you. That is not the church believes in the appropriateness of sacramentals, things which predispose us to receive grace. This turns them into amulets or charms, which would be wrong. So I think Halloween can be, you know, done with good, clean fun. And right now I have kids, they're not going out doing anything occult or demonic. It's just going to be your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man swinging his way through the neighborhood, getting some candy for himself and mostly candy for me. But there is controversy about Halloween. There's always a controversy every year about what is okay for people to dress up as at Halloween. Though, of course, most people, you don't want to step into this thicket, kick this hornet's nest, want to bring up the idea that for some reason every year in Halloween, I think it's like a free pass for people to dress, you know, immodestly or more provocatively than they normally would. I mean, even in secular culture, that idea is made fun of. I think they make fun of it in the movie Mean Girls, for example. What are you supposed to be? A mouse. Duh. So that's one controversial element of Halloween that even I've noticed among some Catholic friends think, well, it's a day where I can cut loose. No, we're Christians every day of the week. And we, you know, we apply it in different ways, but we don't get a free pass to suddenly be immodest or to forsake any of the other virtues just because it's a certain holiday. No, the real controversy around Halloween recently has been about racism and the charge that dressing up as certain individuals, you know, is racist, that it's harmful to them. I think the biggest thing that's happened in the news recently is the outing of Megyn Kelly at NBC News. This is an article published a few days ago at goodhousekeeping.com. It says that after a year on the air, Megyn Kelly Today is coming to an end at NBC. The network confirmed Friday. Host Megyn Kelly is reportedly negotiating her exit from the network after she made controversial comments about wearing blackface as part of a Halloween costume. Now, what happened here is they were talking about the issue of Halloweens, and Kelly was talking, you know, talking about a person on, what was it? She's one of the famous housewives in New Jersey or New York, some show like that, who dressed up as Diana Ross and used, you know, skin darkening elements to look more like Diana Ross, put on a big wig. This is someone who's white, or at least is not black, or Luann de Lesseps. Dresses Diana Ross for Halloween, makes her skin look darker. And Megyn Kelly said, I thought, like, who doesn't love Diana Ross? She wants to look like Diana Ross for one day. I don't know how that got racist on Halloween. It's not like she's walking around wearing blackface or doing that in general. And people got pretty mad about what she said. There's also been controversy this year about children dressing up as Black Panther. Is it okay for your white child to dress up as T'Challa, King of Wakanda, as the Black Panther, because there's not a lot of black superheroes. I'm not saying African-American, because T'Challa is not African-American. He is Wakandan. Luke Cage is an African-American superhero, though his show recently got canceled on Netflix, which is sad because I heard that Luke Cage is actually a really good show. I'll probably watch the previous episodes that were there. Iron Fist got what was coming to it, though. That was an awful show. Ugh. My goodness. See, goodbye, Danny Rand. Best of luck to you. Maybe you'll show up in a future Defenders. Who knows? So Megyn Kelly got a lot of flack about this, though her departure for NBC, really, there were other elements people have been bringing up that she didn't quite fit into the culture there. And I do feel bad for her because she didn't quite fit in at Fox News either. I mean, she would, you know, call out Donald Trump, but I think there's nothing wrong with calling out politicians when they need to be called out. She didn't fit in well there. She didn't fit in at NBC. So she's negotiating a big multi-million-dollar end to her contract. And so if she was someone who's beloved at NBC, I think they would have washed over this. They would have, you know, passed over it, if you will. But that's not the case. This is the straw that broke the camel's back, saying that, you know, she's racially insensitive, things like that. And so what do I think about this? I don't think there's a clear-cut answer on the question of what is racist and not racist for Halloween, whether you can dress up as people of other races for costume parties, Halloween. I do think it's pretty clear that for kids, let kids have Halloween. If a kid wants to, if a white kid wants to be Black Panther, if a black kid wants to be Captain America, that's fine. You know, if a white or black child wants to be Gamora, who's green from Guardians of the Galaxy,
That's not Greenface. That's okay. They're kids. I mean, Halloween was originally, this is a kid's holiday. It's weird when adults keep more and more encroaching in on it. Though I do appreciate that because there's some elements of Halloween. I like the creepiness, the spookiness. That's the part of life that I find to be fascinating. And so that's why I'm eagerly waiting for my own children to be old enough so I can introduce them to an annual Halloween tradition that I love, which is watching Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. I think it's just one of my favorite movies from childhood, easily my favorite Halloween movie from childhood. Maybe the other one that stuck with me from childhood might be Hocus Pocus, which is pretty decent. But Nightmare Before Christmas, hands down, is probably my favorite Halloween movie and could be easily one of the top five Christmas movies. It's both a Halloween and Christmas movie. So one day I'll introduce them to that film. Feel free to leave in the comments what you think of that and others. But yeah, let kids have their fun and don't get on their case about this. Now, you may have to tell a child that dressing up with face paint in order to look African-American, for example, is not a good idea. And this is something, I think wearing a costume is one thing, but for children and adults, there is a fine line with the issue of wearing dark-skinned makeup. Because, and this is fair to point out for people to still feel hurt by this, I don't think that they should act in an unfair way towards other people. They should educate them. But blackface was a part of American history that's a very unfortunate part of American history, that after the Civil War, after emancipation, when blacks were, you know, African Americans were free, and now they wanted things like equal rights, wanted the right to vote, there was a cultural element trying to still make them second-class citizens and deprive them of as many rights as they could. This was done legally. It was done through violence. But it was also done culturally by stigmatizing African-Americans, saying they were less intelligent, they're lazy, they're inanely goofy. And so that's where blackface comes in. This was a style of performance where white actors would put on black makeup and exaggerated African-American features like large lips, prosthetics for hair, and would put this on and then do these minstrel shows where they would exaggerate these negative African-American stereotypes. And the most famous character involved in this in 1830 at the beginning was a gentleman, you know, the character, a white person would dress up as this black character, was a gentleman named Jim Crow. And so, of course, if you heard of Jim Crow, that's what the laws enforcing racial segregation in the United States were named after, this blackface character, Jim Crow. And this is something that went on for a long time. You have people like Shirley Temple, Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney, who put on blackface because it seemed to be like it's just all harmless fun and everyone could be in on this. But the problem here is that it reinforced these negative stereotypes, and it was an effort to demean, disparage, and deprive people of their rights. And so it's just something that's very hurtful. So that and other kinds of negative racist stereotypes, I think we've got to be able to step away from. So no, you can't, you shouldn't dress up like a Jew, you know, with a with the nose and the earlocks to disparage Jewish people. I would highly recommend not dressing up as trying to impersonate an Asian geisha, for example. Just try to use common sense with this. That seems to make sense to me. But so it's funny with the portrait of blackface and understanding racial insensitivity. This goes fairly far on into the 20th century. As you might have guessed from previous podcasts, I am a big Disney fan. And so there is a film that was created back in 1946 by the Walt Disney Company. It was released by RKO Radio Pictures called Song of the South. Have you ever heard of Song of the South? So it was released in 1946. According to Wikipedia, the film takes place in the southern United States during the Reconstruction era, a period of American history shortly after the end of the American Civil War and the abolition of slavery. The story follows 7-year-old Johnny, who is visiting his grandmother's plantation. Johnny is white, by the way. For an extended stay, Johnny befriends Uncle Remus, one of the workers on the plantation, and takes joy in hearing his tales about the adventures of Br'er Rabbit, Br'er Fox, and Br'er Bear. Johnny learns from the stories how to cope with the challenges he is experiencing living on the plantation. Since its release, Song of the South has remained a subject of controversy. Some critics have described the film's portrayal of African Americans as racist and offensive. In addition, the plantation setting is sometimes criticized as idyllic and glorified. Because of this controversy, Disney has yet to release Song of the South on any home video format in the United States. The Disney theme park ride Splash Mountain is also based on the film. So this is something when people come to see, and there's other Disney movies where you see these kind of racist stereotypes, you're like, that is not appropriate now. The other one that comes to my mind is when Peter Pan meets the Indians in the movie Peter Pan, and they sing the song, "Why is the red man so red?" Not appropriate anymore, indeed. So some people might cry, and I talked about political correctness in a previous podcast, and we should just use common sense here. If something can cause legitimate hurt to other people, then we should take some sensitivity to that. But on the same token, we shouldn't go overboard against other people. We shouldn't increase the animosity and make mountains out of molehills, or take people to task as if they've committed a grave crime when maybe they've made just something like a light social faux pas. So that is my thought on the issue of racist Halloween costumes, though I do have a segue I want to jump from that. Before I do want to remind our listeners that we have a special bonus episode this week. The first chapter of my audiobook for Why We're Catholic is available at trendhornpodcast.com to premium subscribers. If you go and make a donation there, greatly appreciate it. Helps the podcast continue going for us to expand in new areas. And you can hear chapter one, get the first taste of our very first audiobook from Catholic Answers, my book, Why We're Catholic, available at trendhornpodcast.com. Do check it out. There was a university campaign, though, and it was going way overboard about Halloween costumes, even beyond just general, yeah, that's probably not a good idea. I mean, there was a university not too long ago that the students wanted to bring in a camel to celebrate Hump Day. Okay, so Hump Day is Wednesday. So it's like, hey, take a break from class, go get your picture taken with this camel on Hump Day. It's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week, the hump. Camels have humps. Take your picture with a camel. And do you know what many of the students at this university said? This is racist. They said that somehow it is racist to have this camel here. And they worried about animal cruelty that was taken. It was at the, University of St. Thomas in Minnesota. Of course. So that it was cruelty to animals to let this camel be out for the day, get fed treats, and have people ride around on him, which people have been riding on camels since Abraham. I think they would actually kind of be bored if people didn't ride them. And yet they said that this was racist. So some colleges especially go way too far on this. So if you want to look for something funny, they did this campaign, and the tagline was, "It's a culture, not a costume. This is not who I am, and this is not okay." The idea here is don't dress up as these racial stereotypes, not who I am, that's not okay, but look up, it's a culture, not a costume parody. They do have some pretty funny parodies of this, with Dracula holding up a picture of someone dressed as a vampire saying, "This is not who I am, and this is not okay," and like a dog holding up a picture of someone in a dog costume like, "This is not who I am, this is not okay." It's so hard. It's a fine line. And I understand where people get too far into this and say, oh, it's too politically correct, so I'm going to be offensive. Well, no, don't do that. I mean, no, don't dress up as a geisha. Don't dress up in blackface. Don't dress up as don't dress up as a priest or nun if you're not a priest or nun. Hey, Catholics, it's actually a sin. It's a canonical crime to impersonate a priest. Now, if your kid is dressing up as St. Maximilian Kolbe for your Saint Day festival, that's not what we're talking about here. But trying to impersonate a priest, that's a canonical crime, to simulate the sacraments. But especially like sexy priest, sexy nun outfits. You know, people get so mad about racist Halloween costumes, but where's all the outrage about all the sexy nuns that are going to be out tonight? And, you know, the bad priests or whatever as an appropriation of my religion. Well, you know, my religion is strong enough to withstand your appropriation, but I still feel like it's worthwhile to point out to other people. So There is that line. It's, you know, don't dress up as a geisha, for example. But there was a story you might remember a while back. A young girl, she wore a prom dress, and it was an Asian style of outfit. And someone tweeted to her, "My culture is not your expletive prom outfit." And people all ganged up on her. She's just a high school kid. It's not like she was dressing up and putting on Asian face. She was wearing a very attractive dress that's worn by other people from another culture. So my plea to everyone is some common sense, please. But here's the segue I want to make from this. So people get really mad, you know, hey, you should not dress up as a black person. You should not dress up as another race. That's cultural appropriation. Don't dress up like these people if you're not them. And yet, it's okay to for men to dress up as women, either under the guise of being transgender and saying that, which, as we saw with Rachel Dolezal, even if you say that you are a black person, you cannot dress up like a black person. That's racist. But for some reason, you can dress up like a woman if you're a man, and that's not cultural appropriation, which to me seems like the highest form of cultural appropriation when you have biological men dressing up as women saying, and then like Bruce Jenner, renamed Caitlyn Jenner, saying in an interview, boy, ladies, we sure do have it hard, talking about wearing high heels. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Bruce. You have not lived as a woman and experienced all the hardships women have to experience. You don't experience the hardship of going through your period every month. I haven't experienced that either. So I don't make judgments on those things because I am not a woman. So there's an article, I first saw it on Reason.com. Robbie Sove is the author. He does a lot of great coverage on inanity at public universities and private universities, including where Title IX is abused and people are prosecuted for clearly consensual sexual encounters that lead to these inflated statistics of rape on campus. Sove has done really great work on that. He has an article up published on October 25th at Reason. Criticizing a drag show earned this Catholic college student a visit from the Title IX coordinator. So what happened is that Declan Leary, a conservative student at a private Jesuit university in Ohio, was questioned by the administration, by the Title IX coordinator. So basically the inquisitor comes in. This is somebody who, if you get them on their bad side to you, they can get you kicked out of school. They could get you expelled. And, you know, if you get expelled from one school, it's pretty hard to get accepted to another one. And he was interrogated by the Title IX coordinator because of complaints about him just saying criticizing the drag show at his quote unquote Catholic university, saying, why are we spending money on this? Is this okay? And I think it's fair to say, is this not, how is this different? How is this different from, you know, you have white people putting on blackface, being exaggerated black people? How is this different from men putting on woman face and exaggerating what it means to be a woman? They'll say, well, it's not trying to be demeaning. Well, even if it's not trying to be, it is. And why are we having this, especially at a supposedly Catholic university? So this is a great article. Go look it up and read it. This I give this guy a lot of credit. I wouldn't have been this bold in college, but God bless him. He's at a private university, by the way, where you don't have free speech protections. The First Amendment does not apply that a private university can censor your material. It's not a public university. So look at the article, Drag Queens and Jesuits by Declan Leary. And this is what this is some of the article. About a year and a half ago, it came time to inform my family where I had decided to go to school. None of them had ever heard of John Carroll University. So their first question was, is it Catholic? And I could only think of one appropriate response. No, it's Jesuit. Disclaimer, know many great Jesuits in my life. Great people, love them, they're the best. But it is unfortunate nowadays. There are a fair number of Jesuits. Makes one wonder the prudence or the orthodoxy of what they're teaching. At the time, I was only half serious. But then I got here and began to realize that my joke hadn't been far from the truth at all. Every Sunday at a mass where I wasn't allowed to kneel because reverence for the Eucharist runs counter to our equality at the convivial meal or some commie mumbo-jumbo like that. Like I said, this kid's great. Kid. I'm not that much older than him, but he's in college. I'm not, at least an undergrad. I sat through a 20-minute homily whining about the president and saying nothing about our Lord. In theology classes, I received at best a vague, watered-down, progressive sort of Protestantism, and at worst, a self-righteous and entirely delusional liberal secularism. And about a month into my freshman year, I realized just how far the Society of Jesus had fallen when I started noticing posters for JCU's annual drag show. I can't help but wonder who thought it would be a good idea to hire grown men to dress up as women on a Catholic campus for the deviant entertainment of misguided young people. It is a terrifying testament to the decay of our faith in our university that, throughout the approval process for this event and the 6 years for which it has now continued, not a single person in a position of authority stood up or at least stood with sufficient strength, to suggest that perhaps such a flagrant celebration of sexual perversity might just be wrong. And here's the thing. Locally here in San Diego, we've also had to deal with this at Catholic institutions. And this is not unusual at quote-unquote Catholic universities to celebrate drag shows. And it's not just the idea of men dressing up as women. I mean, even in old, you know, in Shakespeare, you had women who were dressing up as men, things like that. There can be an artistic side for that, you know, wherever it might be. The kinds of performers you have at these drag shows, there, it's not just about humor of a man dressing up as a woman or something like that. In their comedy, in their banter, in their mannerisms, they also promote sexual behavior that is at odds with the good of the human person, that is at odds with the good of reserving sexual expression for the marital love that can only exist between a man and woman, and idolizing sexual behavior as just something that's hedonistic, that is just something you seek for, that is even beyond just the casual hookup culture or finding sex in an emotional unmarried relationship, flaunting the idea of sexual perversion. The perversion, there's another four-letter. There's two four-letter words you can't say in modern society, sin and pervert. Can't say that. They're four-letter inappropriate words for many people. That talking about engaging in behaviors that are not even just spiritually harmful, but are physically harmful as well for people of any age. So Declan goes on to say, it's bad enough that the society fails to properly, Society of Jesus, fails to properly educate its students in the ways of the church. But when it descends into deliberate actions of sexual deviance in its educational institutions, it has crossed a line that cannot be ignored. They are not who they say they are. It's time for John Carroll University either to radically alter its actions and its character or to admit the obvious and unfortunate truth that it is no longer Christian. Our church and our world are plagued by sexual sin, demonstrated clearly by the recent news coverage of abuse scandals. In the face of these tragedies, many traditionalists have suggested that we desperately need a return to a conservative sexual ethic of chastity and respect for the divine construction of our nature. On the other hand, the Jesuits and their progressive allies, I'm not going to say all like Leary does, but some, on the other hand, seek to redefine our nature in order to conform to the culture of sexual perversion, instrumentalization, and commercialization, which has so ravage the human soul and body. We cannot be immoral. They seem to be saying, if we redefine our morals to justify our sins, this cannot be the solution. We are terribly, terribly lost, and our salvation will not be found in watching troubled men make fool of themselves in miniskirts and stilettos. So there's a fine line with how we need to speak out in our culture against sexual sin. And for me, I'm not going to give people, there's not a black and white way. There is sometimes where we have to enter into conversations where we have to walk tentatively and work with people, you know, where they're at. But in some cases, and some people may be called to this, they're called more to be prophets, to speak out and condemn when evil, when there are people who say evil is good and good is evil, to speak out in a forceful way. That doesn't mean you speak out in an uncharitable way or a way that is either detraction, which is sharing a truth people have no right to hear, or calumny, which is sharing a lie about people that damages their reputation. But discussing about public matters that can cause grave harm to other people, that is completely, I believe, within fair game to be able to do and needs to be called for in these situations. Now, remember, if you come out bluntly against certain things, the response can be very blunt right back at you. So you have to use prudence in exercising in these different situations, calling out disordered behavior, the promotion of evil, when in order to call that out, whether you should use the velvet glove or the iron fist. Only you and your conscience and your sense of prudence can determine what is appropriate in that environment and what is not. And of course, tonight, as you go out, maybe you'll go to a Halloween party. Maybe you will go out trick-or-treating, whatever you may be doing. I hope you will use prudence as well in everything that you do. And remember that, you know, we can be in the world. As St. Paul says, we are in the world, but not of the world. So I believe as Catholics, we should take part. You know, a friend is a Halloween party, as long as it's not celebrating evil or gore or the occult or things like that, that we can take part in the celebrations of the world to be a beacon of light and a witness to others without being in the world. We can reach out to people who identify as LGBT, who engage in cross-dressing. These are not people that we just shun. But the difference here is that when you create an educational institution that's goal, purportedly, is to instill a Catholic view of the world into its students, if it just doesn't want to do that anymore in just certain obvious parts, then yeah, why just let the whole thing go, let the whole facade go. I think Leary makes a very good point here. Instead, though, you can reach out to those who disagree with you. That in the culture we live in today, people think that it's hateful if I don't fully support what you believe to be right or wrong. Not at all, because you think the many things that I support are not right, or at least you don't agree with them. Yet when you live in a civilized society, that's the nature of how we live together, that we tolerate one another's differences, and we seek to dialogue about those differences and not use the force of cultural ostracization, you know, shaming people into submission, or the threat of law, which is coming more and more. I mean, Leary, the Title IX coordinator, the laws of his school were going to come down on him to shame him into submission. So once again, be in the world, not of the world. Be a gracious witness. But no, even no matter how gracious we are, people may still push back against us. But that's why we have the grace of God to give us the strength, courage, and prudence to be able to do just that. So do have a happy and safe Halloween. And remember, if you want to catch out that bonus podcast, bonus first chapter of my audiobook, Why We're Catholic, and other bonus episodes we'll be having next week, and support the podcast to reach many, many other people, do visit TrenthornPodcast.com, make a donation, become a monthly subscriber. Very excited for what's coming up soon here at the podcast. I'm very grateful for all your guys' support. And I hope you have a happy Halloween and a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrenthornPodcast.com.